Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Rama Hare Hare. So, looks like we're starting the beginning of chapter 5, Srimad Bhagavatam, canto 10. And it's not on the screen. I guess I'll read. It's a healthy paragraph here, but it's a summary of the entire chapter, so I'll read that, and then we'll do the verse together, just so we get a sense of where the Bhagavatam's going here. So this is the title of the chapter, is The Meeting of Nanda Maharaj and Vasudev. As described... Ooh, okay, sorry. We have the same problem in Ojai, so I'm glad to hear that you guys have this problem. Okay. As described in this chapter, Nanda Maharaj very gorgeously performed the birth ceremony for the newborn child. Then he went to Kamsa to pay taxes due and met his intimate friend, Vasudev. There was great jubilation all over Vrindavan due to Krishna's birth. Everyone was overwhelmed with joy. Oh, good, you got it there. Therefore, the king of Raja, Maharaj Nanda, wanted to perform the birth ceremony for his child. And this he did. During this great festival, Nanda Maharaj gave in charity to all present whatever they desired. After the festival, Nanda Maharaj put the cowherd men in charge of protecting Gokul. And then he went to Mathura to pay official taxes to Kamsa. In Mathura, Nanda Maharaj met Vasudev. Nanda Maharaj and Vasudev were brothers, and Vasudev praised Nanda Maharaj's good fortune because he knew that Krishna had accepted Nanda Maharaj as his father. When Vasudev inquired from Nanda Maharaj about the welfare of the child, Nanda Maharaj informed him all about Vrindavan, and Vasudev was very much satisfied by this, although he expressed his grief because Devaki's many children had been killed by Kamsa. Nanda Maharaj consoled Vasudev by saying that everything happens according to destiny, and one who knows this is not aggrieved. Expecting many disturbances in Gokula, Vasudev then advised Nanda Maharaj not to wait in Mathura, but to return to Vrindavan as soon as possible. Thus, Nanda Maharaj took leave of Vasudev and returned to Vrindavan with the other cowherd men on their bullock carts. So the verse we're doing, it looks like it's a double verse. And what's that? Just recite the first one? Okay, all right. Thank you for advising me. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Okay, let's do the word for words first, and then we'll do the Sanskrit. Sri Sukha Uvacha. Sri Sukadev Goswami said, Nanda Maharaj Nanda. To, indeed, Atmaja, his son, Utpane, having been born, Jata, overwhelmed, Ahalada, in great jubilation, Mahamana, who was great-minded, Ahuya, invited, Vipran, the Brahmanas, Vedajan, who were fully conversant in Vedic knowledge, Santa, taking a full bath, Suchir, purifying himself, Alankrita, being dressed very nicely with ornaments and fresh garments. Okay, we're only going to do the top one and then I'll read the bottom one separately. So it goes. Sri Suta Gavacha. Nandastu Atmaja Upane. Jatahlado Mahamana. Ahurya Vipranveda Jan. Santa Suchir Alankara. Sri Suta Uvacha. Nandastu Atmaja Upane. Jahadlado Mahamana. Ahuya Vipranvede Gyan. Santa Suchir Alankrita. Uvacha. Jatalo Mahamana. Santa Suchir Alankrita. Sri Suta Uvacha. Nandastu Atmajanupane. Jatalado Mahamana. Ahuya Vipranveda Gyan. Santer Suchir Alankrita. Vacha. Jatalado Mahamana. Ahuya Vipranveda Gyan. Santa Suchir Alankrita. Ladies. Sri Suta Vacha. Nandastu Atmaja Upane. Tatahatu Mahamana. Ahuya Vipranveda Gyan. Santa Suchir Alankrita. Santa Suchir. Jatalado Mahamana. Ahuya Vipranveda Gyan. Sancha Suchir Alankrita. Shisukuvacha. Andascha. Pani. Jatalaho Madamaha. Ahuya Vipranveda Gyan. Snada Suchir Alankrita. Okay, the second verse is Vacha Vityam Swasya Yanam Jata Karmat Manjansya Vai Karayam Asavidatvat Prithir Devan Charantada. Okay. Here's the English. Please repeat. Suta Goswami said, Nanda Maharaj was naturally very magnanimous. And when Lord Sri Krishna appeared as his son, he was overwhelmed by jubilation. Therefore, after bathing and purifying himself, and dressing himself properly, he invited the brahmanas who knew how to recite Vedic mantras. After having these qualified brahmanas recite auspicious Vedic hymns, He arranged to have the Vedic birth ceremony celebrated for his newborn child according to the rules and regulations. And he also arranged for worship of the demigods and forefathers. Purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur has discussed the significance of the words Nandas too. The word too, he said, is not used to fulfill this, to fulfill the sentence, but without too, the sentence is complete. Therefore, the word too is used for a different purpose. Although Krishna appeared as the son of Devaki, Devaki and Vasudeva did not enjoy the Jatakarma, the festival of the birth ceremony. Instead, this ceremony was enjoyed by Nanda Maharaj, as stated here, Nandas tu atmaja upane jatalado mahamana. When Nanda Maharaj met Vasudeva, Vasudeva could not disclose, "Your son Krishna is actually my son. You're his father in a different way, spiritually." Because of fear of Kamsa, Vasudeva could not observe the festival for Krishna's birth. Nanda Maharaj, however, took full advantage of this opportunity. The Jatakarma ceremony can take place when the umbilical cord connecting the child and the placenta are cut. However, since Krishna was brought to Vasudeva to the house of Nanda Maharaj, where was the chance for this to happen? In this regard, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur desires to prove with evidence from many shastras that Krishna actually took birth as the son of Yasoda before the birth of Yogamaya, who is therefore described as the Lord's younger sister. Even though there may be doubts about the cutting of the umbilical cord, and even though it is possible that this was not done, when the Supreme Personality of Godhead appears, such events are regarded as factual. Krishna appeared as Varahadev from the nostril of Brahma, and therefore Brahma is described as the father of Varahadev. Also significant are the words Karanam Asavidadvat. Being overwhelmed with jubilation over the birth of his son, Nanda Maharaj did not see whether the cord was cut or not. Thus he performed the ceremony very gorgeously. According to the opinion of some authorities, Krishna was actually born as the son of Yasoda. In any case, without regard for material understandings, we can accept that Nanda Maharaj's celebration for the ceremony of Krishna's birth was proper. The ceremony is therefore well known everywhere as Nandotsava. So the verse once more. Sukadeva Goswami said, Nanda Maharaj was naturally very magnanimous, and when Lord Sri Krishna appeared as his son, he was overwhelmed by jubilation. Therefore, after bathing and purifying himself and dressing himself properly, he invited brahmanas who knew how to recite Vedic mantras. After having these qualified brahmanas recite auspicious Vedic hymns, he arranged to have the Vedic birth ceremony celebrated for his newborn child according to the rules and regulations. And he also arranged for the worship of the demigods and the forefathers. So, what we have here, there's a lot of things that are being mentioned in the purport, but I think the most interesting thing for me is the fact that Nanda Maharaj is performing this ceremony. Prabhupada's referring to it here as the Jatakarma ceremony. And this is one of the samskaras that are normally practiced in Vedic tradition. I think everybody here has probably heard the word samskara frequently latched to the word Garbhadan samskara. Prabhupada actually talks about Garbhadan samskara many, many places in his books. And he does make reference to some of the other samskaras, but not so much. I mean, we don't really hear too much about them. And That's because I don't think Prabhupada, in fact, I actually had some notes on this here. Prabhupada didn't necessarily want us to become completely sidetracked by a lot of these Vedic samskaras. At least not at this stage in our development of our Krishna conscious movement. Yet I think it's important for us to really take note of what this concept of samskara really means. When you break the word up, some, it actually went through the database and put the words together and did a little research on this, means complete mercy, welfare, well-being, auspicious, good fortune, real happiness. And the word kara means action, cause, doing. And it's interesting, hands, doing with your hands. But a kara, for example, an elephant, is doing with his trunk. Okay? So, as it is with many things in the Sanskrit language, these words have really deep meanings and can be applied in different ways in different contexts. So the point is that what are these samskaras that we're talking about? And as I researched it, I don't know how many people here. I mean, how many samskaras are there? So frequently, the number that seemed to come up the most as I researched this in Prabhupada's books was 10. Although actually, when I researched a little bit more, I found 16. And when I researched a little bit more, I found 45. And then I actually started really going deeply into the meaning of what does this samskara word mean. And actually what it really means is any event that is impressionable on our consciousness. So in this case, Nanda Maharaj is just waking up to the fact that he has a baby son and he's performing this Jada Karma Samskara, which is a grand birth ceremony of welcoming his newborn son into the world. And we're going to read in the next couple of verses, in this verse or in the summary of the chapter, we're finding that he gave away all sorts of wealth to all the Brahmins. It was a very, very magnanimous ceremony. And even in today's world, today, when people have a child, it's usually a wonderful ceremony. Everybody, hopefully, is celebrating the birth of this child. And it is an important moment. And the whole concept of samskara is how things are impressing on our mind, how things are making an impression on our consciousness. So in the Vedic tradition, they actually stop and they look and they say, what are those turning points? What are those junctures in our life that we really should slow down and pay a little attention to? And in fact, there are, like I said, the number I'm going to work with today is 16, because there are 16 points in a person's life that's impressionable upon us. And so I'd like, while I'm having this conversation with, giving the discussion this morning, I'd like everybody to think a minute about impressionable moments on your life. The first time you did something. And it's a little embarrassing because, when I go down that list, it's like, the first time I bought a computer, huh? You think about that, or the first time you got a car. So whether we like it or not, things leave an impression on us. The first time we got a glance from a member of the opposite sex is like, whoa. We think about these things. Now, not everybody's brain is impressed with the same events. But according to our Vedic tradition, these 16 different moments in our life impact how we live our life. And the bottom line purport is that I actually read in one place, it said, every single thing we do impresses our life. Every single action we make. We've heard, I'm sure many people have heard of the butterfly effect. That if a butterfly flaps its wings in Asia someplace, it can create a tornado in New York. These are the quantum physicist people and these theoretical physicists that come up with these things. But actually, there's a lot of truth to it. So if that's what a butterfly can do, then think of every action we do. And I think the world is becoming more and more aware of this as we, devastate the earth and destroy the water and destroy the air. And people are going, maybe this isn't such a good idea. And the only reason why it's happening is because we're not paying attention. So these 16 samskaras actually if we're paying attention to them, they will influence our consciousness. One of the things that I've run into many times in our preaching work in Ojai is sometimes people will say, and these are usually the impersonalists, they'll say, well, how can you control the things that pop up in your mind? I mean, they just pop up in your mind. Yeah, there may be some element of truth there, but what those things are that pop up in your mind are going to be dependent on what you've put in your mind. You know, so if you're just rambling through life and just letting life happen, really the question is, are you doing life or is life doing you? And unfortunately, in the world today, I think too many people, life is doing them. They're constantly trying to catch up. They're constantly trying to patch up things that they should have taken care of before it happened. So in the Christian conscious process, the Vedic tradition is, you know, we're trying to at least do what we can on our side of the fence to be conscious of what we're doing. So these 16 samskaras, the first one, as I've already mentioned, is the Garbhadhan samskara. And when you think about it, these samskaras are all related to each of us as individuals. Well, the Garbhadhan samskara is a little strange if you think about it as the individual, because it's a samskara that's being done actually by the parents of the child, because the child hasn't even been conceived yet. And if I understand it correctly, the parents are supposed to chant more rounds and be very intentional and bring a soul into this world. A very intentional act, hopefully with the idea that that child will be a wonderful child that will contribute to the Krishna conscious philosophy and way of life for the rest of the world to benefit from. But an interesting point here is that my understanding is that there's four types of children a person can have. If you had a relationship with somebody in the past who was an enemy, and that child, if that person comes in as your child, then you're going to have a very difficult relationship with that child. If that person happens to be a debtor, if you happen to call a soul down that was a debtor in relationship with you in your last life, then that child is going to maybe cause a lot of expenses for you, medically or emotionally, psychologically, legally, whatever. And sometimes we see that. Sometimes some children are just a terrible burden. If that person happened to have a neutral relationship with you, neither harm, no foul. But we're all hoping, and this is what the whole Garbhadhan samskara process is all about, to call a child down that you had a wonderful relationship with, and they will be a wonderful son or daughter. I think Janaka Pandit says something about that. Better to have no son than have a bad son. There's many references to this sort of thing. So the Garbhadhan samskara process is to actually consciously have a child to become Krishna conscious. And we all know the Western world is far from that, unfortunately. And Prabhupada, many of the comments that he makes in his books are specifically addressing the fact that because there is no respect for this Garbhadhan samskara process, therefore we're seeing all sorts of very, very mixed up people being born into the world. All sorts of really, it's very sad. It's very sad. The things are becoming more and more crazy as we go along. So what's the next one? The next one is the Samatanayanam. And there's a couple different, you know, this is one of the things when you research this sort of stuff, you hear a couple different opinions. So instead of getting bogged down in the details, I'm going to try to approach this from what's the principle here? And the principle of this particular samskara, in the Western world, we know it as a baby shower. We still have some relationship there. When a woman is going to have a child, I know when I was working for the Navy, I think all of us are aware of this, a woman is advanced in her pregnancy, they have a baby shower. It's before the baby is born. And it's with the idea that, oh, you're going to give a child. Let us find some nice appropriate gifts you can help to take care of the child when he's born. And it's a way of bonding and friendship and stuff. And again, impressing upon the mother, you are going to have a responsibility here. And we as a village, if we can call it that, are here to support and help you in raising this child. A very intentional moment And I, of course, I've never given birth, but I understand that for women that are giving children, you know, they're carrying this child for 9 months, and it's like, whoa, that's a meditation in itself. And so before the child's born, it's like, wow, whew, let's do this right. So it's a moment. And like I said, depending on who you talk to, it could happen in the fourth, the seventh, the eighth month. And then there's a couple different words here, too. There's a pumsavarana samskara, and there's a valakapalu samskara. One is specifically prayers to beget a son. And then the vatakapa is the women will give the lady bangles, which is a form of wealth, which is also creating that bonding relationship to know that we're here if you need us to help raise your son or your daughter. So what's the next one? Jatakarman, and that's actually the one that Prabhupada's talking about here. The one that Nanda Maharaj is performing as he realizes that now, Krishna, oh, I have a son. Okay, let's have a big festival for the fact that he's a king. Yeah, I now have a son. I want everybody to feel auspicious about this. Of course, his son was no ordinary person. He was Krishna. And there's another word here that's used, tao samskara. Tao actually means coming out of darkness, so I didn't find a whole lot on this, but I think the concept is that the child is coming out of the womb and now all of a sudden there's light, and, you know, he's waking up. Okay, the next one is namakara. So namakara is what it sounds like, nama. It's when the child is given a name by the parents. This isn't the same as your initiated name. This is when the parents give a name to the child. So again, these are very impressionable moments in our life that, wow, now I have a child. And I think all of us know that some people may go about it whimsically, but I think most people try to think of a nice name to give their child. And most of the devotees naturally tend to name their children something devotional for the same reason that we all have devotional Sanskrit names that Prabhupada gives us or our spiritual master gives us. So that we're, again, always being remembered to think about Krishna. Very intentional. Not just life is doing us. No, we are doing life. We are going to make decisions that will enhance our ability to stay conscious instead of just blindly pounding in the walls and tripping over logs and just, you know, blundering our way through life, which sadly I think is unfortunately what many people seem to be dealing with. So anyhow, that apparently 6 days after birth. And usually, at least in traditional Vedic life, we know, and Krishna is a good example, I think it's Gargamuni, was an astrologer who came, a spiritual master who came, and he said, he looked at the astrology and he said, ah, and that's when he said, oh, whoa, this is no ordinary son here. This is an extraordinary individual. And he was given the name Krishna. Okay? So then the next one, again, 9 days, 4 months after the birth, after the child's actually born, the mother comes out from quarantine, meaning out of the house. So think about this for a minute. I mean, the reason why I'm going through these things is because we generally don't think about stuff like this. But it's the first day the child is exposed to real sunlight, because prior to this, they're just sitting in the house. And rightly so, because, you know, you don't want infections and the mother's nursing and this sort of thing. So at some point, the child goes out into the world and sees the sunlight. So that particular event is called Nishkramana Samskara, also known as Uttana Samskara. A child leaves the house for the first time and is exposed to the sun. And then the next one, this other one, I think probably some of us have seen this, and I think Prabhupada refers to this a few places in his books, called the Anaprasada Samskara, which is the first time the child eats a grain. Prior to then, most likely the child's predominantly living on liquids and probably the mother's breast milk. So this is the first time the child is taking a grain. Now, whether we remember it or not, what's interesting is obviously until we become conscious enough, we're not necessarily paying attention to, like I said in the beginning, the Garbhadhan Samskara. We're not even here yet, so how could it be affecting us? But remember, life is a complete cycle, so these ones that are bringing the child into the world, that's for the parents, predominantly. I mean, that's the way I understand it, because this is happening in their life. So we're getting now, we're moving from that to where it's impacting the individual. So I don't know, most children, this one about taking grains, it's like 6 months after birth. And most people, I don't think their consciousness has developed that much to remember the first time they took a grain. But it's a pivotal point. It's a juncture point in our growing and maturing into an active human being. The next one is the mundan or the chudakarana. This is 1 or 3 years after birth. And I think many of us have heard of this one too. It's called the hair cutting ceremony. And some of these are very much practiced in India today and with great celebration and great festivities. And also what's interesting about this is that some of these are not just some kind of mundane ritual, even though I'm even reluctant to use that word, because, like I said, they're impressions on our consciousness. But actually, some of them have very practical meaning or practical application as well. In this case, the spiritual side of it is that the cutting of the hair is supposed to representing the cutting away of negative karma from the past. Because frequently, although I'm not a doctor, my understanding is frequently children are born with a little bit of hair as soon as they come out of the womb. And so that the scalp of the child is too tender for it to be cut, so they wait a while. Because it's considered that that hair is not pure, so let's get rid of that. So they wait till the first year or so, and then they do this hair cutting thing to get rid of that negative karma. And it is a symbolic, it clears for a bright future. And of course, obviously, it also, there's some other things here, protects the child from evil, but it also cleanses the body. Now the child's got a nice clean head, okay? And it's also cooling, particularly in countries like India where it can get 100 degrees if you're living in Rajasthan or many places in India can get extremely hot. And apparently it also has a way of preventing headaches and medically apparently it also enhances hair growth, so new hair growth will come in. So some of these things actually have a practical application as well. So what's the next one? Number 8. These are impressionable moments. Oh, you're going to answer the question? We're getting to that. Yeah, but I'm doing the 16-point list, so I've got a few more in the middle here. But we're getting to that one. Karnaveda, ear-piercing ceremony. Apparently, we don't do this so much in the Western world. Kuda Karna, shaving of the head to leave the sika. When they shave. The shaving the head the first time is just basically clean the head, but then apparently there's a separate time where they actually shave for the sika. It's like, as I was thinking about that, as I was thinking about the world we live in today, it's like, one of the things that popped in, and this is one of these strange things that pop in your head, is like, I worked at the Navy base, and a lot of these Navy guys, it's real common. Of course, nowadays, tattoos are all over the place, but 50 years ago, in the 50s, and especially during World War II, it was very common for the sailors, the drunken sailor leave, and they get whacked out of their head. And what do? When they're totally wrecked out of their head, they put a big tattoo on their arm of all sorts of strange things. It's just an example of just how blatantly unconscious we are. Let's go get a tattoo. And then they wake up the next morning, whoa. Well, you got it for life now. What to speak of other things we do without paying attention. I mean, the whole point I'm trying to make today is a conscious... In fact, there's a word that's used in the New Age movement. It's called intentional living. It's used a lot in the Buddhist, believe it or not. You intentionally want to become nothing. Of course, in Krishna consciousness, we don't intentionally want to become nothing. We intentionally want to become Krishna conscious. Or, as some devotees have said, you have to become conscious before you can become Krishna conscious. You got to be paying attention to what's going on. Otherwise, life will do you. And we don't want life to be doing us. We want to be doing life. Okay, so then we get to Brihaspati. It's called the Vidyabharamba, the beginning of study. And apparently this is very much exactly what you said. The child is given a piece of chalk. Kids, we sometimes see this, the children out here with the big sticks of chalk drawing pictures on the rocks, on the pavement. But in this case, they're actually with a teacher, not necessarily their life guru, but their parents are saying no. And they teach them how to draw the letters of the Sanskrit alphabet, or probably Hindi alphabet nowadays. But traditionally it was the Sanskrit alphabet. And not only do they draw letters, but they draw mathematical numbers. They may not understand really what those numbers are, but the idea is that they're making the child become familiar with these are meaningful symbols. So when you see them later, they'll make more sense to you. But at least now we're getting you familiar with how to do it. And the other one is they give them a musical instrument and maybe teach them a few musical instrument things. And in this way, we can find out at a very young age, because we all have different skills and different propensities. Some children are going to immediately pick up that musical instrument. We see there's many examples of this we've heard of and know about. Some children pick up that musical instrument, and you got to wonder, like, whoa. And they just take it and run, and they're by, you know, Mozart. By the time he's five, he's writing these symphonies, and everybody's astonished. And there's many other examples in the world today if you're looking into those sort of things. What to speak of, some children will immediately pick up the pen and write words and maybe become very good linguists or poets or something like that. So, again, impressionable moments that are having an impact on that person's life. And I think at this point we're clearly moving across the line from now it's the individual who's appreciating these, like, what do you call it, photo opportunities in life. Stop that moment. This is when I first picked up a pen. And again, I'd invite people to think about impressionable moments in your life. The first time you did something, or the first time something happened, and it left a big impression. Unfortunately, because for many people life is doing them, these impressionable moments sometimes, there was a fellow in my office, something happened, this is an associate I worked with, something happened to him when he was like in the sixth grade, and it impacted his entire life. And he just could not, you know, everything he did, whenever something came up, and, you know, I had to play psychologist with this guy, every time it came up, I said, well, because that's what happened in sixth grade. I said, oh, that was like 40 years ago. Okay? But we all have these little moments that will impact us and color the way we see the world. And more importantly, color the way we interact with other people. And this is sort of the origin of what we refer to as prejudicial treatment. Or, remember, prejudicial. Because somebody of this race, nationality, color, place, whatever, big, fat, small, green, whatever, did something to me, therefore you're going to... No. Each individual is individual. Don't forget that. Don't let that bad, unchecked, life-doing you samskara impact you and carry it with you, who knows, until you finally realize this isn't doing me any good, unload it. And that's why we have so many psychiatrists in this country, because they're helping people, hopefully, if they're ready to really do the work, to unload all of these unintentional samskaras. Okay, so let me get up to Upanayana. This is where the child actually enters school. I remember, I had two older sisters. I remember the first day I went to school. It was kindergarten for me. And I was really glad I had two older sisters, because my mother was saying, you're going to go down the street and you're going to stand on a corner and a big yellow bus is going to come and you're going to go with your two sisters to school. And it was like, what? What's school? And I remember that day. I probably was 5 or 6 years old. An impressionable moment. So here's the samskara for it. You're beginning, this one's actually where the parents are actually entrusting the child to a spiritual master, usually a local teacher in the village, who's going to now actually formally train. Think about the educational system we have in our country today. You know, we get a series of teachers, at least for my education, I had a lot of series of teachers until about seventh grade. And then not only is it a series of teachers, but then they break it up, a teacher for 45 minutes for math, 45 minutes for this, 45 minutes for that, you know, sports, whatever it is, art, math, science, English. And it all gets kind of turned into this fuzzy ball of teachers that we had. Whereas in the Vedic tradition, the teacher was somebody who actually taught you. They understood who you were. They understood your mentality. They understood your proclivities and your tendencies, and they worked with you. And if you're not, you know, not this one system fits all education, but if you're not inclined to do music or whatever, then we don't do music. We do agriculture, maybe. Anyhow, so we'll move along here. And that's when they, you know, teach you how to put on tilak. It's a whole spiritual relationship with the teacher. The next one is the shaving of the face for men and the menstrual cycle for the women. You have impressionable moments the first time you shave or so forth. So I'll just cut through these as a matter of time. And the Samavartana, a student ends life and graduates out of the Gurukul, and the teacher says, okay, they're not necessarily taking a household or ashram at that point, but he's graduated from the teacher, and he's now, and it's actually said that's when he's learning a little bit about the art, the karma, dharma, moksha, or at least the first three. He's learning how to make a living, and then if he wants to take a wife, he can. But he's aware of the fact that there's responsibilities there. Anyhow, so the last couple ones here are the, then you actually may choose, an individual may choose to take a family life. But at that point, he's very aware of what he's getting into. A man's accepting a wife, he's accepting a whole lot of responsibilities. That's not taught in America today. At least I don't see a whole lot of it, unfortunately. And then there's the, and then, of course, we go. And then we go into the Varnashram system. And then eventually, you move out of this Grihastha ashram and you take the Vanaprastha. And then, from Vanaprastha, if you're so inclined and you have the opportunity to live long enough, you take sannyas. And then the last one is the obviously the death sanskar. It's called the atyeshtita. And a person actually leaves their body. I mean, that's that. I think in this country we still have some respect for when a person passes away, especially if there's somebody very dear to us. It's like, whoa, yeah, that's going to leave an impression. So, what time do we normally start? Stop. 8:30? Is it 8:30? Okay. Oh, 8:15. Oh, okay. I'm 15 minutes over my due. Wasn't paying attention. I thought we went to 8:30 actually. Okay, well, with that in mind, then, I don't know if it's time for questions or not, but thank you all very much for your patience, and go do life. Don't let life do you. Haribo. Haribo. What's that?